Well, thank you very much for the warm welcome, Graham. It's I must admit, after last year, and I was sort of moving into that retirement phase, and I thought, good heavens, I really hope it's not my last camp. So you have no idea how excited I've been to look forward to today. So not to rehash the earlier comments about camp, but yes, 26 is a fantastic number. And I do have to say, from my perspective of being here at least a few times, most boards don't have something like this. So what I want to say to Graham and the team is, congratulations for keeping something so important going. This is a fertile ground for making connections, for trying new ideas, for learning in a safe space to what I think of as creating the ripple. How many conversations will you have when you leave camp and influence somebody else's thinking or influence what happens in your own school? There's no replacement for that. So carry the CATSE spirit strongly with you. Be part of the wave making. So congratulations to the board for continuing their support of this amazing event. And I do want to share a little trivia piece with you. The IT department was recognized internationally for their approach to this kind of learning. It's job embedded, self-directed learning. And these programs, along with CATSE Connection and the after-school workshop program that's put together, was actually recognized under the Futures Ready program when President Obama was in charge. And our recognition of the work that the Waterloo Region District School Board did is still on their website. So when I talked to Harry and Becky about how long do I have and how might this play out and so on, you never know the exact timing. So I thought the best thing I can do today is think of this presentation as more of a resource. So I've included a link here, bit.ly, CATSE Camp 2017 keynote, so that you'll see there's lots of videos, lots of links, lots of resources. There's everything is in here. You will know that I'm a proponent of open learning and sharing, so I'm actually recording my speaking this morning, and assuming it turns out reasonably well, I'll put it up as a podcast so that you have a reference for today as well. Now, I needed to get your attention to start, so this is normally where you would put a title in for the workshop, and I couldn't decide. Or maybe I did decide and it's white on white. So what do you think? We'll come back to that. So retirement's an interesting time. You sort of feel like, wow, I had an absolutely fantastic career. Worked with so many great people, got to be involved in interesting projects. I felt like I learned every day. I had my thinking challenged, got to be involved in some amazing things that ultimately impacted how we work, how we learn, how we collaborate every day. How fantastic is that? And then there's other days you think, wow, the meeting schedule's gone, yay. But you miss it, you miss the people. So it's wonderful to be back here. So I was kind of thinking, hopefully the two things I can do today is share an interesting perspective and perhaps most importantly, poke your thinking a little bit. That's what I love to do. So we all know in the business world there's this term, ROI, return on investment. And if you were working for a company, imagine what kinds of things they would be talking about. What's our profit margin? How has it changed? Where are we at from an efficiency perspective? Where can we make improvements? Are we overstaffed? Are we understaffed? There's all those things. And we know that for any company to stay alive, if you would, stay competitive, keep their edge. Those are all important considerations. But I thought an interesting framework for today might be, I wonder what those letters might mean if we look at it from an educational context. What might ROI mean in the learning context? Well, here's one idea I came up with. What if we thought about relationships, opportunities, and innovation? Now, we can think about those in different ways. That might mean one thing to the board, to the senior team. It might mean something else at the school level. But maybe the best question is, what does this mean to you? What does it mean in your classroom? What does it mean to that learning space that you're creating with those students? So I started to think about relationships. And as I was chatting with Harry and Becky about preparing for today, I thought, well, what are some things I can draw on? I'll leverage my 19 years and the other years as well. So I thought, okay, well, in May, I signed up to go to the Glenview Park reunion. Why? I taught there for 18 years. Fantastic experience. It was great staff, so many interesting students. But I went, admittedly, not really knowing what to expect. I mean, who goes is random. What would the conversations be like? Who would you meet? Who would you miss? Who would you wish you had have connected with? And I thought, yeah, this is an interesting framework for today. So here we are. This is Teresa, graduated in, well, here's the old part, 1994. And what's really interesting here is I got to reconnect with a whole bunch of students that I taught, and now I got to meet them not only as adults, but as parents. And so we had some very fascinating conversations. What did they remember? What stuck? What didn't stick? And maybe the thing I learned the most about was, are they seeing now as they watch their own kids in school? And many of them have kids in the Waterloo Region District School Board. So fascinating conversation. So what's their story? Well, I'll introduce you to a few of these folks, all graduated from Glenview Park in the early 90s. So starting on the left, we have Danny, interesting student. He went on, did his university work, but decided community service was really important in his life. And he was so passionate telling me about what he's actually doing with his music now, working locally with the churches, and it was important to him also to run a business. So he's actually got a piano tuning business and serving the community and so on. The next person is Elaine. She had a long conversation with me about finding your passion. And although she works now in the insurance industry and so on, she played trumpet in the band. So yeah, math, music, computers, those were my teachables. But she's now also active, singing, performing, and that's a part of her life. She loves the self-expression, the creativity, and all that goes with that. The next gentleman, third on the top there, is Scott Mills. Scott was one of the first students I met when I started at Glenview Park. And a great student, passionate, and he's actually gone on to be a teacher. And he told me the reason was his teachers cared. They fostered relationships with him. They talked about his passions. They spent time with him outside of school, music and other endeavors. And he said, that really changed my mind about what I wanted to do. The girl on the upper right, Kelly, also went on to be a teacher and also was a former babysitter for us, so that was handy. Teresa there, you saw in the opening screen, she talked to me a lot about her experiences in different job things. She's worked in the education system, but she's also now fostering a career where she's working independently. But her conversation was about the importance of creativity and what's happening in her life now. The next gentleman, hiding behind the camera, is Greg. Greg Trust, a longtime trombone player in the band. And he was another one that talked about teacher relationships, fostering the relationships with the kids that helped them find their passions. And you can tell from the photo, photography is one of his. And the last gentleman is Jason Adney. He and I have kept in touch through Facebook over the years, but I had a fascinating conversation with Jason. He has, I think, three kids now. They're all in school. And what he talked about was his high school experience from the perspective he never thought about before. And he said, you know, when I was in school, I loved going to school because I had passionate teachers. I was involved in extracurricular, and he said, you know, I didn't really realize now, until now, that Watching my kids and their education, I didn't realize what I had, because he said, I recognized I had the best teachers. And he said, I mean that sincerely. He said, teachers were interested. They found solutions. They knew how to push me. They knew how to challenge me. They helped me become a better person. And what struck me about all of these conversations was nobody talked about exams. Nobody talked about test scores, the one they blew or the one they aced. Nobody talked about any bad memories. They all talked about these themes of passion and being challenged in a moderate but effective way. They talked about the relationships with the teachers. And all of these things just resonated through these conversations. And, you know, that really struck a chord with me. As much as we get caught up in what's next and what's tomorrow and get my marks up and what's the analysis, in the end, those things are all important, of course. They're professional responsibilities. But it was just really struck me in talking to these folks who are now in their early 40s that what was important to them are really the big picture things. Creativity, the trust, the relationships, the encouragement, the being there for them when they had a challenge or a hard time. And I thought, you know what, that's absolutely not about technology, but it is such an important message to share with you, and I hope this can, maybe one of these stories resonates with you or reminds you of something that you've experienced, but I would encourage you, share those stories. They are important. We're so much in the moment of what do we need to do now, this week. Don't forget, this is all about people. Now, the other little sort of funny thing was, Jason said, do you remember the Big Eater Circle? And I sort of paused and I thought, yeah. After we did school shows in those days, it was fine. We used to go out with kids and we had pizza and all this stuff. And he said, you know what would be really neat? We should do the Big Eater Circle again. And we are going to do that. So the next day that weekend, I went down on Sunday to London, revisited Saunders Secondary School where I graduated and had an opportunity that day to give a presentation on technology and education. And so I was sitting in the auditorium thinking, yeah, here it is, just like this. Learning goes on. The building's there, the people change, the learning goes on. And I noticed kind of the same sort of passion, the enthusiasm, the things that were really important in those teachers, it's the same thing the kids talked about. So somehow in all of the things we do, let's not lose the passion. So bringing us a little closer to day-to-day education. I love reading. One of the tools I use for curating is an app called Flipboard, and you can use that to choose your interests, and it'll generate new articles for you all the time on what's new. And I thought, well, this is a perfect chance to show that curating material and reading what's new is important. And I thought, okay, here's one that I found this week, published through Business Insider. They interviewed 14 CEOs of company around what do you see as the number one job skill? And I thought this was a pretty interesting list. And if you look through it, I thought, okay, what if, let's make a big assumption here, that this list is a good list, and it's a list that would stand the test of time. What are the things on there that might make a difference for education? So I got looking at the words, and here they are. Resilience. Putting feedback into action. Self-directed learners. And I'll tag that one with number 12. It's not acceptable to say, that's not my area. I just do X. I love this idea of technical fluency. And I know in your learning and experiences here, that's something that comes into play. And communications. And I thought, those are all elements of education, but they're also things that you can build into what happens in your learning space. What happens in your classroom that touches on these things, the going deeper sort of beyond curriculum. I thought, yeah, these are really, really interesting terms because, let's face it, the world is changing, technology is here to stay, and the rate of change is only getting faster. I don't think it will ever go slower. It just won't. So we have a large number of opportunities in front of us. So hopefully some of these, this part's a little bit like a wedding, you know, something old, something new. Maybe it'll poke your thinking in some kind of a way. So some of you at least will know George Kuros, well known in the Twitter sphere, at G. Kuros. But I think one of the things that he has used in the theme in his presentations that I wanted to sort of just put a little bit of a highlight on is this idea of isolation. And in today's world, one of the benefits that we have is we can connect. We can connect absolutely, traditionally, face-to-face, conversations, small groups, large groups. But we also connect through social media and many different electronic mediums, synchronously and asynchronously. And how do we leverage the best out of this mix? I mean, you're living and teaching right now at a time when this mix hasn't been a part of education. It's now that you have this unique opportunity. And so he raises an important point. Have we reached a point where isolation is simply a choice? And is it acceptable to be isolated as an educator? What about this idea that collectively, the smartest person in the room is in fact the room? We're smarter together. We learn together, we share together. And I think that's an important idea. I think it's also important, and we know from the ministry initiatives, we know from the board goals, we're encouraged to share and reflect. And that's great, but my question is, how do you do that? What's the best way? That's my question. Now, I put a blogging graphic up here. I am a blogger. I believe in it. I believe in open sharing. I believe in the reasons that it lists up there, but it's not limited to that. Could be a podcast, could be a YouTube channel. Maybe you like those guys that record something on their GoPro camera while they're driving to work, and that's their blog post for the week. I don't know. There's lots of fun ways to do it. But I got thinking about the why. Why share openly? Well, that's part of the ripple effect. Because once you take something and you make it public, whether it's a blog post or a podcast or whatever, now it's searchable, findable, linkable. You can comment on it. You can share it. You can reblog it. You can reference it in Twitter. You can use other people's work and ideas in workshops. And to me, that's the power of starting to mobilize knowledge. You might have the best conversation right out here in the hallway, but how do I find it? How do I link to it? How do I take your thought and bring it into a conversation that I'm having? And so there's some interesting things there. And I think this idea of taking a little bit of time, and I don't mean fanatical, like spending 6 hours a day on social media, but to occasionally, as appropriate, share what you're doing, share a good idea, share a resource, share a reflection on something that you did in your classroom. To me, that's important professional growth. And I think it helps you consider something that I'm very fond of, is this idea of what's your next? What's the best next thing that you can do for you and the students in your classroom? That's always the question for me. That's the most important thing, is what happens next? And it's framed on what just happened. And so there's an iteration there in the learning cycle thinking. You have an opportunity to create unique learning spaces. And so this one for me is just a little bit of a poke. So how do you set your classroom up? Are you a rows person, a pods person? Are you a flexible furniture person? Do you rearrange your furniture as you need it? Have you predetermined this? Or do you allow students perhaps to have some input in what their learning space looks like? How do you honor student voice, student choice in the idea of setting up your classroom? And perhaps more importantly, with technology, you have this unique opportunity to rethink so many aspects of how you deliver the curriculum, how you work with the students, how you prepare them for moving forward. This idea of rethinking, to me, is really important. Because frankly, 30 years ago when I was teaching in the classroom, rethinking didn't mean the same thing. there wasn't the rapid rate of change. There wasn't the new technology. There weren't the drivers to change at such a rapid rate. And so we should leverage this opportunity to learn, to explore. And I know that that's what you're here to do today. So this is kind of one of the old and new questions. A few years ago, I had a chance to hear Jamie Cassatt from Google to speak. He probably has the best job title in the world, a Google evangelist. How cool is that? But he posed a question then, and I've just adjusted the year. And it's just a perspective shaker. The worst technology a child born in 2017 will use is, and you fill in the blank. It's a Galaxy smartphone. It's an iPhone 7, or maybe an iPhone 8 if they hurry up and get them out. It's a Windows 10 tablet. It's a new Chromebook. It's whatever. And for us, we think, holy cow, this technology is amazing. It's the best technology I've ever used. But remember, for that child, it's the worst technology they'll ever use. And so when we think about these ideas, and Graham alluded to this idea of communicating and digital workflow and so on, as the tools change, we're always sort of playing catch-up. And you look at what a child can do in their life forward, their learning experiences, it's all just incredible. And so I would challenge you to think about that statement or that question a little bit and just see, how would you answer that question? What does that mean for you and the students in your classroom? Now, I do have to talk about the picture on the right. Where's Tina? She challenged me to sort of work this into the presentation. So this is my way of introducing you to my about-to-be-born first grandchild. And so theoretically, anytime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But of course, now I've put my grandpa, holy cow, that makes me sound old, my grandpa hat on, and I'm wondering, what will education for this child be like? Now, I've already been teasing my daughter. I am so pumped about this idea of having my first grandparent-teacher interview. It's like, no, Dad, it's not happening. And I'm thinking, I'll find a way. Sadly, they don't live in the Waterloo Region catchment area, at least yet, and I'm working on that too, because I know the fabulous work that goes on in our school system, and I would certainly be honored to have my own grandchild in our system. So a few other perspectives. I think this idea of we all need to know some kind of digital basics comes into play. Everybody needs to know something. The question is, what's the something? Because it changes rapidly. How do we distill this rapidly changing world perhaps into some kind of, I almost hate these kind of phrases, core skill sets and this and that, because we all know that those change all the time. And so what does that really look like? Sometimes I think it's more of a mindset of just being a learner, not just the kids, us too. I want to be a learning grandparent. I want to be involved in that child's upbringing. So, what does that mean for all of us? Now, here's an interesting thing. They're predicting by 2019, not very far away, that there'll be almost 200,000 jobs in Canada needed just in the coding area. Now, that's not necessarily a plug for coding, but it is a plug for mathematics and problem solving and collaboration and expression of ideas and all the things that go, the tentacles that go from something like coding. And so it's impressive to see those numbers. I mean, look at it. Close to 80,000 jobs in Ontario alone would be part of that. And so isn't it important that we really think about digital literacies and digital workflow in the mix of all the things that we do in the curriculum? It's hard to ignore companies like Amazon. And I saw this article. They just hired 50,000 people. And I heard something about another 100,000 at their new office suite in England. And we sort of live in this time when we think, jobs are disappearing and, all these things are happening in the world around us. Yet I don't really think they're disappearing. I think they're just changing. And so maybe a lot of folks won't work in some local stores and some things like that, but you might be part of these massive companies that are impacting on the global business stage. Maybe that's where the students will work. Now, this next few slides, I'm just going to do little teasers of about a minute, because I really think that there's something that sometimes gets glossed over in education, and I don't mean it in a negative way. Things are busy. We all have all the things that take up way more of our time than you can possibly address. But to me, there's this important idea that education is about the student's future. What are we preparing them for? Now, some of the things in here, you might say, this is too futuristic. I welcome your challenge. But I think these things that I'm going to show you are happening faster than you think they are. So let's poke your thinking. So this is actually recent research. It's actually happening. It's an interesting idea. Yes, I have to admit, I'm a drone enthusiast. I bought one. I've got to find out how they work and all the things that go along with them. But companies are looking at these ideas. Why? Not because drones are new, drones are cool, but there's an impact on their business. Fits right back into efficiency, delivery, customer service. Now, what about all the jobs that are associated with that? Communications, web workflow, inventory management, route planning, all these things. There's lots of jobs. They're just different jobs. I don't think anybody right now is, drone route map operator. But maybe that's a job of the future. Oops. I love this one because what really caught my attention is this idea of humans and robots working together in the same space. Imagine that your working partner is referred to as a cobot.
The importance of leveraging the power of these highly intelligent robots is it allows us to decrease our labor costs so that we can reinvest those dollars in locally sourced responsibly farmed ingredients. Most of our robots cost between $20,000 and $35,000 per robot. That cost is a lot lower than you can imagine a human being full salaries and benefits. Our labor costs are about half of what you would see with a traditional restaurant or national pizza chain, and that's why our pizza, Zoo Pizza, is half the calories of a national average pizza. It's because we're able to source these high quality ingredients. And that ability is enabled by the automation. All of the employees at Zoom have full vision, health, and dental benefits. They're also shareholders of the company, and so we have very high compensation for the humans that are here. The robots are a lower cost than humans. It really wouldn't be possible for us to replace all of the human beings at Zoom Pizza. We're a cobot situation. Robots are really great at repetitive tasks, like the motion of taking a pizza in and out of an 800-degree oven, 360 times a day. They're great at generating the same product consistently over and over again without stopping. But robots are not creative. Robots are not problem solvers. We will always need human beings to do our scratch cooking, to develop our recipes, to get feedback that's why I say we have a cobot situation, humans and robots collaborating. We own several patents at Zoom. One is for cooking en route, and what we're doing with that technology is cooking the pizza while it's being delivered to the customer. What does that mean? That means that I won't start baking your pizza until I'm about 4 minutes away from your house. So that pizza is coming to you absolutely the moment that it's ready, fresh out of the oven, as if you were in a pizzeria. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any industry or maybe any food type that wouldn't benefit from this kind of intelligent automation that we're using.
Tickle your interest? Okay, this one's a little bit of a longer video. Again, just a little bit at the start to set the stage, but I found this one really personally interesting, and certainly given the geography of Waterloo Region, I think there's some...
With the current food production system, one cannot look past how broken it is. We have surrendered our knowledge and control over how our food is being produced, and as a result, we're destroying our health and the environment. It's a shame. We're here to change that. 3 years ago, I had an idea for a new paradigm of food production. The idea lies at the intersection of automation, the open source DIY maker movement, and small-scale polycrop farming. And over the last 3 years, a small dedicated team and I have been working to make this idea a reality. Introducing FarmBot Genesis, humanity's first open-source CNC farming machine. FarmBot moves around in the XYZ space, day and night, 7 days a week, growing food for you, just the way you want it to be grown. FarmBot precisely sows seeds in any pattern and density you want, and then waters them efficiently, the exact amount that each plant needs based on its type, its age, soil conditions, the local weather, and your growing preferences. FarmBot can grow a wide variety of crops all in the same area at the same time, while each plant is cared for individually in an optimized, automated way. By growing many types of plants at once, your garden will benefit from the natural advantages of polycropping and crop rotation, while you and your family gain from a healthy and varied diet. Using the onboard camera and advanced computer vision software, FarmBot diligently monitors your garden, detects weeds as soon as they emerge, and then buries them under the soil. FarmBot can show you how your garden changes over time, enabling smarter, more efficient farming with each asset.
Now that's weed control. Now, for the last video in this section, I will introduce you to my daughter, who has been here to CatsCamp as a helper a few years ago when there were more things to set up. Charlotte is just going into fourth year at Ryerson. But she did a big trip this summer, went to South Korea and Japan with a friend. And so I said to her, well, I showed her a bit of a preview of what I was thinking of doing for camp, and I said, well, what did you see on your trip? Those videos that I showed you are a little bit futuristic in nature. What did you actually see? What's happening in other countries? So I asked her to make some comments about things that she's seeing and something else, another idea where I think there'll be lots of jobs for our students is in this area of recycling, but not as we know it now. So. Let me introduce you to Charlotte.
Hi, so my name is Charlotte Carbone. So I'm related to Mark Carbone. I am a fourth year student at Ryerson University of Fashion Design, and I've just been back from a riding trip to Korea and Japan. While I was there, of course, there was culture shock, but more interestingly enough was seeing how technology was integrated into the workforce at a very basic level, which is part of everyday life. So, firstly, something that was common to big department stores, such as our equivalent to, let's say, the Bay or Honest Ed's Beverage in Toronto, you enter and you are humanoid robots called Pepper, and they're AI. So, as soon as you go in, instead of a greeter, it would be a robot where you can select your language and communicate to it verbally, and it will redirect you to whatever you may be looking for. It may be simple as you look for a certain item, or you need to talk to a person, but either way, this robot has replaced a human job that has done it more efficiently, potentially, because it can speak so many different languages. And of course, it does have a personal touch that if you do need a human, and you can go select to talk to one, but it just increased the efficiency with these robots, and they're pretty standard as well across Japan. Another thing that I found pretty typical in Korea and Japan were the use of kiosks as well. Typically, when you go to something such as a subway, there is maybe only one collector, but the rest are all automatically that you use a preloaded card of the system to tap in and out of. To reload the card with money, same thing, you use a kiosk to insert money into. There is little to no human interaction unless you need to troubleshoot something if there's an issue. Same with when you go to eat at a restaurant. Particularly in Japan, you'll typically go to a vending machine, select what you want on the buttons, insert money, and get an order sheet that you give to the chef personally yourself. So instead of having a waitress, this vending machine greets you automatically and you do everything self-service. Something unique to Japan in terms of food, the restaurants, was kaiten sushi, which is bulletin sushi. So in Canada, it is here the all-you-can-eat sushi you order from an iPad and it's brought directly to you, but Japan takes it to the next level when the sushi is delivered by a motorized little vehicle around the restaurant. So imagine you go to a restaurant, you're assigned a seat number. And while you sit there, you order on an iPad, and then there's a trace track that races around the restaurant. And when you order, because everything has an assigned number, you say, send a shrimp roll to table 47. And the shrimp roll knows what table 47 is, so it comes speeding along the track, it stops in front of you, confirm on the screen that you received it, you take it off, and then the little cart it zooms back to the kitchen. So you don't even need to talk to a person to go and order your food. Related to my trip to Korea and Japan, I've been reading this book called Cradle to Cradle. The concept of Cradle to Cradle is taking materials that are used to make goods, and they are an endless loop. They're constantly recycled into new ones. Currently, our cycle is from cradle to grave, meaning that what we make will eventually end up in the grave, the dump. August 2nd was a significant day to do cradle to cradle, because on August 2nd was Earth Overshoot Day. Earth Overshoot Day is when we have used up 1 year of the Earth's resources, what it can provide us. In 1971, when the day was first calculated, it was only at December 21st, meaning we only messed up about 10 days of our Earth, whatever time here with the Earth's resources. However, because we're on August 2nd, that means we missed out on 4 months and we're going to the opposite. Apparently, if we can reduce the date by 4.5 days every year, by 2050, we'll be back on track with using the resources the Earth can provide us in a sustainable way that we replenish. A lot of design ideology out there that's currently being used by people is a lot of greenwashing. Greenwashing meaning making a green product seem green, but really it's just as bad as the normal equivalent of it. It's more than just making the less bad product, but making one that actually is more sustainable. As a person born in the 90s, I would still be alive when these days are going on and we're constantly going to deficit. So sustainability
Me
is
too.
A core issue to all industries that are polluting the environment, especially fashion. It's more than making the less bad product, but making one that will start to solve the problems we've created altogether. For example, as someone in the fashion industry and the most polluting of textiles, it's more than just saying recycle your clothing. Because again, eventually the clothing will have a life that ends up in the landfill. It's starting to look at the origin of this clothing and saying, how can we make a fiber that can be constantly recycled with this downgraded quality? Or thinking, how can we take this clothing and it becomes something else to be used? Can it be planted? Can it become a tree eventually? You never know, right? So it's looking for these innovative design solutions to interrupt the cycle, make it into a loop. As a closing note, it's nice to be virtually at camp. I'm going to see unlimited hot chocolate, and I hope everyone has a great time.
So let's move. Oops, is this on? Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. So let's move to innovation. In my own mind, this is something I've always held sort of near and dear to my heart, that I really do think teaching is an art. And The two graphics, the paintbrush and the binder, for me are troublesome. The paintbrush represents everybody should do this, everybody should do that, because to me that represents sameness. And I can't help but ask myself the question, if everything's the same, how are we meeting the needs of each student? And I don't know how to wrestle that, except we need to think about that deeply. The binder, to me, represents the idea, well, I had a great year last year, I'll just take that and do it again. Well, maybe there's something about the idea of ban the binder. I'm not sure that education should be like that again, because it's about the kids. It's for them, their future. So, you know, what do you do to learn, to model, to engage, to motivate, to differentiate? How do you actually motivate yourself in terms of growth mindset? How do you model that for your students? Do you share what you learn with them? Do you demonstrate what you learn with them? We're all in it together. Remember, the room is the smartest people. Now, sometimes when you think about innovation, we think about people like this, Elon Musk. He's got a few things on the go. Tesla, SolarCity, SpaceX, The Boring Company, Neuralink, and who knows what'll come out in the next week or two. But he's changing the world every day, bit by bit, leaning on people, leaning on their thinking. And I admire that because of the energy. He's part of the wave. He's pushing. Now, I had these videos. I think given the time, I'll just skip over them. But, maybe I'll just show you about 10 seconds of this one. Like, our students today are growing up at a time when, you know, launching a rocket, it's like a monthly occurrence. I don't know if you follow SpaceX, but they launch almost every month. And the pace is going to pick up. And right now, I think, okay, so they're doing things that are routine. They're taking stuff up to the space station. They're launching a satellite. And so what? We've been doing that for a long time. But did you know that Elon Musk wants to launch over 4,000 satellites and have a global network of internet available to all citizens on the planet? You can only ask the question, he might need that for what? What about running the Tesla network? Electric cars. I mean, you can start to see how things all fit together. But I love, I mean, to me, this is like math and science just Not yet. Okay.
Six.
You know this part.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
But this is the part that matters to me. What they're doing is the bottom part of the rocket is now re-landed and reused. It's cut the cost of a space launch by about 40% in the millions of dollars. Now, is this not math and science at its best? Now, the rocket that's landing, I looked up all the information on it. It's about 200 feet tall, 15 to 20 feet in diameter. So it's like landing an apartment building and not wrecking it. That's really what this amounts to. And they have two landing systems. This is a fantastic example of landing on land. But they also land on their drone ships. And you can find them all, YouTube, search SpaceX, all the videos are there. But this is math and science. And his goal is we should be able to launch things and provide communications to all of humanity to establish colonies on the moon, on Mars, all these different things. That should be routine. He wants to get to the point where there's a launch weekly, maybe even daily, and reuse rocket parts. That's the world that our kids are growing up in, not the twice a year NASA launches. Times are changing. So I had to show you that because it's so incredible. And if you haven't seen one of those, it's absolutely worth it. Now, I'm not going to play this video. It's actually a documentary. It's not homework, but I would encourage you to watch this at some point. It's about an hour long, just like a good TV show. But in here, you will see interviews with Elon Musk talking about the importance of renewable energy, reducing emissions, influencing the ozone layer, things that are very important for our planet. And when I think about those kids in JK, or the kids that are born this year, we need to change the world for them. And that's everybody making a difference. Sure, he's taken the lead by a long shot, but we all play a role in some of those things. So I have four other slides in here. Again, I'm going to leave these as resources for you to take a look at. But they're things that I had a chance to be involved in personally, which is why I chose them. This was a project that one of my retirement things was actually to go and volunteer in classrooms. It seemed like a fun thing to do. So this was a project that I did with Rosemary Berndt at WCI. And we actually took something that she was doing in her French class. Kids were doing some research based on a abridged version of Phantom of the Opera, and they used to do a report in class. So I challenged her, and I said, "Are you interested in upping the game here?" She said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, how is this collaborative? Or, you know, how are you documenting this? Are you contributing to the general learning space?" Anyway, after some negotiation, she said, "Okay, I'm in. How about if we make this into a podcast-style project?" The kids would do the research. I was only the podcast recorder guy, and I helped a bit with the video. But it was really interesting. If you have the left slide is a two-minute thing of her talking about how her students' work changed by using technology. And instead of the kids, for example, feeling like, "Oh, you know what, I can talk in front of my class for 30 seconds and survive," now the kids had their Chromebooks, they had individual research tools, they were working collaboratively on their own research, they were proofing each other's research, they were challenging with questions for fact accuracy. They had practiced saying the things. All of the students and Rosemary commented that the students put way more effort into preparing for this. Why? Because it was going public. She had got all the permission forms signed, and the right-hand video, the virtual museum project, was the research slides with the students' voices. And that's on YouTube now. And so she's contributed back to the learning community. It was a fantastic example of somebody taking a step, thinking out of the box a bit. It wasn't wild, it wasn't unmanageable, but it was really neat. And the thing that I love about the voiceover video is she's already talking about, "Can we do this next year, because I know something else I want to do now." And it was like the fire got lit. It's part of the wave. This was an example. Scott McKenzie invited me to come to a Sphero competition. Well, and the challenge was, to me, this is like living math. The kids had to program their Spheros to go on the track, but they were in teams. They hadn't seen the track before, and so some kids were programming. They were trying and experimenting. They were taking measurements. They were reporting back. They were figuring out how to alter the programming. They were coding, but it was math. It was fun. It was physical. It was movement. It was collaboration. All those things rolled up into one activity. And Scott, I have to give you a little apology. I still owe you a video from the last event, and we'll get that done. So I have my own homework to do here too. This was a cool example that Allison and I were involved in last year. It was a mystery hangout. Now, the reason I'm talking about this one is for two reasons. Oh, and Tanya too, at Vista Hills. The idea of a mystery hangout is the two groups don't know where each other is, and that you prepare a set of rules by which you have to figure out where the other group is in the planet. Now, in this case, we had the Vista Hills school classroom, and we had a group of teachers on Manitoulin Island. So this particular example showed staff and students working together to learn. The teacher end, they wanted to learn enough about this that they could construct their own activities and go and do it with more teachers and therefore more students. And so I was really intrigued by this. Alice and I got to play sort of the back role of fact checkers, hint givers, and so on. But I was fascinated with the kinds of questions and what happened when you say you have to ask precise questions. The only answers are yes and no. So think about inquiry now. Well, is your group east or west of the Manitoba-Ontario border? Are you north or south of the 401 corridor? Are you within 50 kilometers of Algonquin Park? Are you in the Eastern time zone? Well, you could imagine there was all kinds of scurrying, and I might almost say a little bit of panic on some of the kids' part. You could see it. What's that? So without any direction, the kids split themselves into groups. There were kids that were in front of the mic. They were kind of interacting with the remote group. There were other kids receiving the information. They were fact-checking. They had Google Maps up. They were checking off, yes, it's here, it's here, it's not there. Other kids were deciding, well, what's our next best question? Let's generate a lot of questions and figure out what's the best question to ask next. Which one will give us the most information? And so it was really interesting to see, is it all about technology? Absolutely not. But did technology facilitate a really interesting learning experience? Absolutely. And so you tie it together, questioning, prioritizing, inquiry, all of those things come into play. And I think in the bigger win, if this had been done with two groups of students, this is maybe just the front end to something else. That now maybe these, let's say this was an example with two classrooms. Well, now they know where each other lives. Well, what's your economy? What's ours? What's the size of your town? How are we similar? How are we different? Maybe we can correspond together in a second language that we're all learning. Things like that. And now it becomes a real-world learning experience. It's not just you and the buddy that sits in the desk next to you that you've already known for 10 years. It's you and somebody new. It's about relationships. ROI. Right? Some interesting things there. The willingness to try something new. I was honored to be asked to be part of the TED Ed group this year. You're familiar with TED, TEDx, TED Ed, TED Youth. Those things are all the same. Bringing your best ideas forward, student speaking. And again, this wasn't about technology, but technology facilitating a better learning experience. And so kids doing research, inquiry, they're challenging each other's work, challenging facts. They're practicing their speeches. The technology part of this, we were able to provide a real-world audience for them by broadcasting live on YouTube and live on internet radio. And so the kids were recorded. They have videos up now showing them expressing their best ideas. What a fantastic thing. I hope that we do more in this space this year, and I hope I get invited to participate. And this last one I wanted to talk about briefly, won't take too long, but just the idea. I was involved in this because it was a staff development project, but I think there's some nuggets in here that really play into classroom life too. So the idea was, this was based on a book study, studying a book written by Kathy Fosno. She wrote a book about strategies for learning math, changing what you do in your classroom. So we decided that we would call this, it's not a book study. So instead, what we arranged was for 9 weeks in a row, there were interviews with the author, and we did them live on internet radio, and those were recorded. So if you couldn't catch the broadcast, you could listen to it whenever it worked for you. There were podcasts where we interviewed teachers about what were they trying in their classroom, what was the impact on student learning, what they would change if they did it again, what they were observing. In other words, you're sharing. You're becoming part of the ripple, part of the wave. I'll introduce you to, and these are all live links, by the way, to Matthew Oldrich. He's blogging on a platform called Medium. It's a nice, quick post thing. But he's got this idea of mathematize this, taking a photo of something and just stepping back to see what are all the mathematical things you notice in this photo. So cool. But now it's a hashtag. It's on Twitter. And if you go on there, you'll see hundreds of people have contributed images, ideas, questions. And so it's become like a live resource. And there was also a blogging and resource component to this, so that people were actively reflecting. So again, this was about teacher learning. But the ideas in here that were important to me were choice. You could do it now, do it later. You could choose the platform. Were you podcasting, blogging? Were you listening? Were you talking? There's all those things that come into play. And so, to me, it was just a really good example of thinking out of the box a little bit to try something new. So, I'm going to close up here very quickly. Remember the title slide? Well, here's a few ideas that I had. Maybe this presentation is about the refactor. Relationships, culture, reflect, rethink, relevance, future-oriented. Maybe that's one title. Maybe it's the tale of the three buckets, R, O, and I. Maybe it's then, now, and the future. I don't know. Maybe you have a better idea. So, but this is my invitation to come and chat with me. I'd be interested to know about what you heard, what resonated, what you wished I had have skipped over. I'm always interested in making things better. So, in closing, we often talked about the importance of changing the trajectory of a student, a child. But I would encourage you to think about changing your own trajectory, too. Where's your path? Where will your learning take you? Remember that kids are more than numbers. And while sometimes that seems like the game, think back to those folks that I taught 25 years ago. They're people. They all have a path. They all have a story to tell. They all want to get better. So how do we help them do that in a world that's becoming more and more statistically oriented? How can you gain comfort in continuing to push the envelope? Remember, ban the binder, ban the paintbrushes. Take your own journey in terms of moving along new ideas. So, as you're learning here at camp, I'd encourage you to find the joy in learning. Embrace change. Celebrate the gift of being with students in 3 weeks when school starts up again. And enjoy your journey. Now, I thought originally about giving you a long laundry list of resources, and then I quickly nixed that idea. I've listed some contacts for three people that are active on Twitter. They're active bloggers, and I think will, in a nice way, push your thinking. And again, if you go back to the blog link, these are all live. You just click on them to make those connections. If you want to connect with me, you can find me at those and other locations online. So to Graham and crew, thank you so much for having me here. It was an honor to be able to share some ideas and poke people's thinking. So enjoy the next 3 days and enjoy learning the CATSI way. Thank you.
I have the great privilege of thanking Mark. I think he also taught us how to renew, that we're getting ready for a new school year and to renew our enthusiasm, his passion for learning and his vision for what we can do with our students has gone on for years and years and has shaped a lot of our lives. But we also think about he hasn't stopped learning. He's retired and he's still pushing us. And so we thank you for that because that we appreciate that, how you have that vision and that passion. And we so appreciate everything you do for us.